Hey, welcome back to the Killer Frogs, a podcast all about TCU athletics, live here at the Poop Deck every Thursday night from 6 to 7 o'clock. Thank you guys very much. My name is Sean Fouché, and I'm joined this week with Nathan Hernandez. Nathan, how you doing?
I feel like I'm the bearer of bad news every week. Like,
why is that?
The actor that played Dumbledore died today in Harry Potter.
Yeah, well, last week you brought us the news about
Trayvon Diggs.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was a bad
news. I don't need to talk about the Cowboys this week.
You know, we're probably just going to have to keep you away from the news next week.
That works.
Yeah, that does work. All right. Well, we're going to jump right into this this week. This is Hall of Fame week, and so unfortunately Shannon's not actually with us this week. But joining us for the Fan Nation update, we have got a new writer we want to introduce everybody to. This is Nick Geramonte, who's a TCU student. So, Nick, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, my name's Nick Geramonte. I'm a junior communication major. I'm from California. I started writing for Killer Frogs about baseball season last year, so not even a year in. And I write mainly for men's basketball and beach volleyball. And I also work for the football team.
Wait, you got the beach volleyball gig?
I did.
Did you guys have to draw straws, or how did that go?
Yeah, I got lucky. Barry gave me that one, but it was definitely fortunate. Good year.
Has anybody ever told you look like Luka?
What'd you say?
You look like Luka Doncic.
Oh, really? I'll take that. I'm a Warriors fan, but I mean, I'll take that all day. I'm not.
Well, as you may hear, he is a bit of a basketball fan. So do you have any news for us about men's basketball this season?
Yeah, I mean, practice started Tuesday, so the roster looks as good as ever. I think we're being, you know, slept on a lot in terms of looking at the Big 12 field with, you know, what Kansas has done, K-State, Jerome Tang just got an extension. But we reloaded this thing. I mean, this roster's full of dogs. We got Jameer Nelson, one of the best transfers ever at the point. We bring back Emmanuel Miller, one of the best returning players in the country. We got Ernest Uday from Kansas, who I think, when given the opportunity, can be one of the best big men in the conference. You know, probably besides Hunter Dickinson. But
oh, that'll be a big, big help.
Yeah, we needed that big man. We were looking a little slim there with, you know, Jacoby Cole's coming back too, and Xavier Cork. But we have the returning talent and the transfers coming in, a couple of good freshmen. You know, Jamie really knows how to adapt to this new age of college basketball and just turn over the roster every year where we can be competitive every season.
So what do you think? Postseason? I mean, it's early, but what do you think? Postseason for this team looking pretty good?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of what we did last year, two conference wins back-to-back years, I mean, I feel like we can easily make it to the conference. Obviously, being in the best basketball conference in the country helps.
And it keeps getting better.
Yeah.
So, definitely. I mean, how do you feel about the new teams coming into the Big 12 this season?
Yeah, Houston's obviously one of the best teams in the country in bringing them in. Since he, you know, has had a good track record, they were a 2 seed, I think, just 4 or 5 years ago. BYU's a sleeper. I mean, going up to Provo is a tough place to play, and UCF can be dangerous, as we saw a couple years back with that Taco Fall team. But, no, they're great additions for basketball. We're going to be a powerhouse for years. And I think we just got a new 4-star, Micah Robinson, the other day, who chose us. He's a top 75 recruit in the country. So, obviously, something's proven that we think we can have success here and turn over guys to the pros.
Well, Jamie certainly does a really good job with recruiting. And also portal. And like you said, I mean, this modern day of college basketball, really college athletics in total, Jamie has done a fantastic job of turning the corner and really kind of getting this program on track.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to adapt in this age with the transfer portal. Obviously, we've seen it in football, too, where you can flip a roster so fast in the span of 1 year. So if you lose, you know, a Mike Miles, a Damian Ba, you can take a Jameer Nelson and an Avery Anderson and Trey Tennyson and just turn these guys back in 1 year to stay competitive throughout year after year after year. You don't have to have this waiting period where you're waiting for guys to develop and stuff like that. So I think Jamie's done a perfect job in, you know, getting guys to buy into what he has to do, and we're going to have success here for years.
Well, hopefully that success will continue this year and we see another postseason run for the Frogs. But Nick, thank you very much for joining us this week. We really appreciate it. And, of course, you can find all the articles that Nick's writing about basketball in the future, as well as the rest of the articles that Killer Frogs is writing on the Fan Nation, by just going to killerfrogs.com. And remember Killer Frogs? Fan Nation's part of Sports Illustrated. And, you know, guys, real quick, sorry, I forgot to bring this up. Equestrian. Barry brought this up last week. Equestrian beat SMU, which was the number one team in the nation, and is now ranked number one this week. So we want to be congratulations to the Equestrian team out there for that ranking and that victory. That was a fantastic week by the women. All right, well, Nick, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate that, and we'll have him back later on, especially as we kind of get closer to basketball season.
Thank you. Yeah, it's first podcast appearance, so I'm loving it. Anytime you need me, I'm back on.
Absolutely. We'll have you back on for sure. Thank you. All right. Well, Nathan, let's get into the game that we saw on Saturday, the battle for the Iron Skillet. Oddly enough, the Iron Skillet was nowhere to be found on the field after the game. There was no flyover before the game. But, you know, this is one of those kind of rivalry games that TCU has had issues with in the past, but on Saturday, I didn't really feel at any point in time that the game was out of control. How about you?
I think it was one of those games where, and there was a couple games like that recently that I was at or watching, and one team feels in control the whole game, but it's one of those situations where if a couple things kind of start to go the other way, they could be back, the other team could be back in it. And so I think that's what was like kind of sitting in the back of my mind is like, you know, it's only a 10-point game at one point, 27-17. If a couple things, like, happen, like, you know, a bad turnover, mishap, you know, a ref gets involved, they could easily be back in the game. And then all of a sudden now we're sitting there worried like we were against, you know, Baylor last year where it's just a stressful situation. So I think it was one of those games where I couldn't get too caught up in what was going on and that we were ahead because – of how easily something could have happened to turn it around. And that's college football. That's football. It's sports in general.
Of course.
You just never know with the way things are going to happen. Like I watched, I think it was a college basketball game a few years ago with like Texas A&M and somebody else. They scored like 9 points in like 3 seconds. And like it was just a turnover after turnover, whatever it was. And so you just never know what's going to happen. But I did feel good about the game for most of the game. Like I was like, okay, you know what? I'm not stressed. I'm not like worried. But I don't let myself get too ahead of myself.
Yeah, I totally understand that. There was several times where TCU just couldn't seem to finish. Well, multiple times couldn't seem to finish in the red zone, and it was frustrating to see. And unlike the turnover situation that we've had in previous weeks, it just was lack of execution. Penalty getting in the way, missed opportunity on a pass, bad play calling, whatever the case may be. I don't know what it is about Briles and the red zone that seems to be his kryptonite. But even with those miscues, even leading up, and we'll talk about this later, the crazy missed fake field goal attempt where Sandy was considered down because he just couldn't quite get up fast enough. Even those situations, I didn't really feel that TCU was completely out of control of this particular game, which, to me, I kind of feel that there's been progress being made. A lot of times, you know, the most progress you see in a football team is going to be between week one and week two. We've heard that year in, year out. This team, though, seems to be progressively getting better week in, week out. And that, to me, is very promising. What do you think?
I think that's kind of a staple for Coach Dykes, honestly. And we saw it last year. We saw it with previous teams that he's coached, like at Cal and everything. It's just every single week they focused on what they need to do that week to get it the win. It's not looking ahead. It's not saying, you know what, we've arrived at any point in time. It's just continual improvement every single week. 1% better, 2% better every single day. And I think Coach Dykes has done a good job with that and instilling that kind of culture here at this school, which I'm actually happy about because that's what I like to see. I like to see us not be satisfied with where we're at. I want to continuously improve, not look ahead to, you know, if Texas is coming and we've got a certain school coming and that's not that great. Or like with Nicholls State, you don't want to look ahead to Houston. You got to take care of business. And I think that Coach Dykes is doing a great job with that. So I want to continue to see that. I'm much happier with that kind of week-to-week progression rather than just saying, like, oh, you know, week one to week two is great. And then at that point, you've got the team that you've got.
Right.
It's an evolving season, so you never know what's going to happen. You've got injuries. Some teams end up falling off halfway through, whatever the case may be. We saw that with Oklahoma State last year. Started out super hot, and then later in the season they fell off. And then, honestly, kind of after the game we had with them, they kind of started to decline a little bit, and then now look at them. So you never know what's going to happen throughout the season, so I'm excited with the continuous small improvements every single week as we get into Big 12 play.
Yeah, and going back to this game, though, I mean, some of the progression, some of the progressive aspects of this particular team, starting with offense, Morris seems to have gotten to a point, and a lot of people don't realize or forget that this is only Morris's, what, fifth full game with action. And it seems
Baylor a few years ago.
Well, maybe we'll call it six. But it seems that the game has kind of slowed down for him finally. And he's making throws, he's making reads, far better than he did in week one against Colorado. On the defensive side, the 3-3-5, and I wish Shannon was here because we all know he's not a big fan of this defensive scheme. Even while the game was going, in our text thread, he was not a fan of what he was seeing on the field. But on the flip side, I have to admit, I kind of am enjoying to see what Gillespie's actually bringing every single week. It seems that this defense is going to be set up to try to take out whatever strength the other team has on offense. So in the case of last week, it's going to be the passing. For the week before, it was the rushing. For this week, probably you're going to be focusing more on the rushing and try to force this freshman quarterback to actually beat us through the air. So it's not the same kind of defensive scheme that TCU fans are used to seeing, which, you know, in that 4-2-5, it was set up to not just stop the run, but also pressure the quarterback and get those guys on islands and shut it down across the board. This defense seems to be more of a chess game, and you just kind of have to understand it's going to be more bend than break.
Yeah. I understand people's frustration with the 3-3-5. If you're running a pure 3-3-5, rushing three pass rushers, you know, you're not going to get a lot of pressure. Not in today's game, not with how quickly the ball comes out, the offensive schemes. The 3-3-5 is just not going to get the job done straight up. But what I was alluding to a couple weeks ago, as the season progresses, as we get into Big 12 play, now you start to kind of tip your hat, show more pressure with, you know, backers, a safety, a corner, whatever it may be. I'm not going to give away stuff or talk about things in case they haven't planned, but you get into the more pressured side of things, and you can see it. You can look at other colleges around the country. They do run a 3-3-5, but they have, you know, blitzes. They have different packages that come in to create different ways of showing pressure. And so I think that that's what we're going to start to see more and more from Gillespie.
Well, we certainly saw that in the SMU game.
Yes, and you saw it a little bit in the Houston game. When we start to bring pressure, and when you have those quarterbacks that can create extended plays, you have to be able to bring pressure. And so I think that we just didn't want to reveal that too early this season. Like, you don't, there's no reason to show it against Nicholls State. You want to be good at what you're good at, have your bread and butter that you can go back to and fall back on when, you know, players are tired and, you know, games on the line. But you start to introduce these blitz packages as you go through the season, as you get to Texas, as you get to Kansas State, and you need to create different ways to win the game defensively. I think that's what we're going to start to see a little bit more.
So going back to that, do you think that that was part of the issue with the Colorado game? As you're going to hear fans, they'll be like, well, why hold that back? Why not show those things when you're playing a team like Colorado, especially when you're having problems with, you know, Sanders and his ability to throw the ball? Do you think part of that is the fact that the 3-3-5, we weren't able to get into a scheme because there was so many unknowns with that Colorado offense?
Yeah, we had no film on them. You can go back and watch their offensive coordinator at, where was he?
He was at a Division II. He was a G5.
Yeah.
Kent State.
You go back, you can watch that film, you can do all this research in the past, but now that they have come to Colorado, they have different players, they have more skill at certain positions, they game plan differently. They're not going to run the exact same offense. They have similar things. But as you get into it, you start to key different players and want to get the ball to certain people. And so you change it up a little.
Well, when you have guys like Hunter and Sanders, I mean, obviously that's going to change your game plan.
Exactly. And so early on, no film on Colorado. And you saw that how that's starting to kind of come against them now as teams have film on them. You saw that with Colorado State. You saw that with Oregon. Early on, just no film. You don't know what's going to happen, and so you're kind of hesitant to kind of go all out in certain ways, because if you do and they have the perfect play drawn up and it comes back to bite you, now other teams have that film on you too. And so they can do the same thing. It's what Oklahoma did to us for years, is they realized we were weak with running backs coming out of the backfield. And so they just exploited it all game long. It's all Baker would do, just dump it off to the running back out, and they would just get chunk plays after chunk play. And so you're hesitant to do that. Again, if you bring pressure, now you're leaving people man on man. You don't know how they're going to do, especially with players like Travis Hunter. A lot of people this year have been questioning our corners and our safeties. And so it's, you got to kind of pick your poison. Do you want to bring pressure and leave our corners and safeties one-on-one? Or do you want to sit back, kind of bend, don't break, how we have been doing, which isn't the most ideal situation. You don't want it. You'd rather just shut them down, three and out, whatever. But if you are going to bend, don't break, it's a little more stressful, because now you have to let them get into the red zone and rely on shorter fields. I'd prefer to just, you know, shut them out early. But if it bend, don't break, it works.
Well, it certainly worked against SMU, yeah. And I think it was a net positive to see this defensive unit get a game like that against SMU, because SMU is actually a really good team. I mean, when they come in here, and I know as much as we were predicting last week, it was going to be a close game. I think everybody had it as a close game. And so seeing them be able to take SMU and being able to handle that offensive production and really kind of stifle it for four straight quarters and be consistent almost every single series, only giving up really one big play, a couple of miscues. Outside of that, though, I mean, they did a really good job of shutting down SMU. And that, to me, really kind of bodes well as we start to get into the meat of this Big 12 schedule. But on the other side of the ball, some of the positives that I saw out of the offense is that we're consistently moving the ball downfield. Our rushing attack seems to be getting better and better. Amani Bailey is an absolute beast. He really is. Now, the only problem that I've got is that he seems to be taking 60 to 70% of the snaps when it comes to rushing plays, and that does not bode well for his health.
Yeah, I don't know what was behind that. There could be all sorts of reasons. Maybe someone was a little limited this week, and you just kind of want to let him get some rest early in the season. To come back. But yeah, I even noted it too. He was getting a lot of touches this game, which is, it's a double-edged sword. If he's doing really well, great, run him. If they can't stop him, they can't stop him.
Yeah, but
you also do expose him to more hits, just more time for something to happen. Not saying anything will, but you never know with that situation. The more playing time someone gets, the more they get worn down. And this was a staple for us last year. Just as the game goes on, you find that our offense starts to wear people down with a running game and then chip away and chip away and chip away. And then eventually they're too tired. They can't keep up. And that has happened several times this year, is that our running backs, you know, they break for longer touchdowns and to kind of put games away. And that's what we saw a lot last year. And that's what I'm hoping to kind of continue to see this year you want to get up early and then establish the run game obviously first, but then get up early and then continue with that run game and then just wear people down, and eventually they can't keep up.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that in Colorado as well. I mean, by the time you're halfway through the third quarter, it seemed like the running game was going really, really well, which is why a lot of TCU fans were a little confused that we weren't just pounding the ball there towards the end of the game against Colorado. But we certainly saw that in SMU. So that to me is a net positive. And I think Coach Briles has done a really good job of kind of adjusting that. And as much as we give him grief about the play calls in the red zone, he does seem to be getting better, again, week to week when it comes to his play calls. Let's talk a little bit about special teams for a moment, which this season's kind of been more hit than miss, but there have been a couple of questionable things that have happened through the season. And the biggest one happened on Saturday, where we attempted a fake field goal. First off, why?
I don't have a problem with it.
Really?
Okay, so this, and I was thinking about this on my way home. And this kind of goes back to Bryles and a lot of the stuff that they do on the offensive side of the football, is if you come into a school and you stick with what you have, don't change up a lot, and just do what you do. Obviously, if you're good enough, you're gonna still win. But if it's not working, everyone's going to complain about how stale it is, how stagnant it is. Look at, I reference this probably almost once a week now, but with Les Miles at LSU, he just refused to change. Ran the football, John transferred from LSU to TCU because they never threw the football. That's not the only reason why, but...
Like we never used to throw to tight ends.
Exactly, we never used to throw to tight ends. Now, look, we have some of the best tight ends in the country. But you run into this issue of, as a play caller, you want to stick to what you have, but you have to change enough and do enough creatively to win football games and to keep yourself relevant. Now, the flip side of that is when that doesn't work, people want to tear you up for being too cute. And I saw it all over Twitter. I saw it all over the forum. We're being too cute. Just do this. But you have to create different ways to win the football game. I'm probably going to get ripped up for saying all this, but I don't care, because I think that the bigger issue is, for Bryles at least, I think it comes back to his past, and I think people don't want to let go of that, and so they're so quick to throw him out based off of play calling. But play calling in college right now is really hard with how fast offenses are, how good defenses are getting because of how much speed they have now. You have to be able to produce points. And if you're just running the same stuff over and over again, and Colorado did it, they sold out to stop the run. And they're, hey, Chandler's going to beat us with his arm. You have to create plays to do that and to beat us with his arm. And so, yeah, I'm good with us, running. Get into that old, not the old, the frog package that we had with Shea.
The wild frog.
Just get in.
Oh, Shea Will. There's a blast from the past.
Just line up, big man, beat him off the football. But eventually they start to cue on that, and they put their big men in, and it's a stalemate. And so you have to find different ways to get somebody out in space and find ways to win football games. And it's just whether – if it works, people love you. If it doesn't, they hate you, and they want somebody else to come do it. But I'm okay with the fake field goal. I know that was a long tangent. I was thinking about that the entire drive home that I was sitting in traffic. There were every single route I had home after the game, there was a major wreck. So I don't know what people are doing on the highways, but learn to drive safer, guys. Anyways, sorry. But that's my rant on the whole play calling thing, and I think people need to relax a little bit. It's only we're about to go into week 5. Just let them do their thing and let the play callers. Obviously, if we get to the end of the season and it's an issue, whatever. But
well, I think it's fair.
Yeah.
And I see your point. I'm not saying you're going to win me over on
that
particular
argument. I know.
Because I'm going to be in team just kick the field goal in that situation, especially considering the fact that even if Sandy were able to get up and try to actually attempt that pass, they seem to be ready for that.
Yeah,
I mean, it was covered.
I mean, yeah,
in the
they
end zone.
Sometimes you just get not out. They call the right play to counteract your play, and it happens. It comes down to a lot of execution and who's going to win. The reason I'm okay with the fake field goal, it's a rivalry game. You find different ways to just do – like, they would have done the same thing to us. They've done the same thing to us in the past.
How many times up in the press box was saying, watch the fake?
Yeah, watch the fake. Just because it's a rivalry game. You just do things to win the game or to throw them off, create some momentum for yourself. And so that's why I was okay with it. Did it work? No. Did it look bad? Yes. But we won, so who cares?
Well, in the end, TCU did end up beating SMU for a score of 34-17, and I think Chuck was actually the closest one last week with his prediction.
So we talked about the game. Chuck got the SMU points right. I got the TCU points right.
Okay, sorry. I am corrected. I stand corrected. But overall, I think it was a great rivalry game. It was a good look for TCU. It was a great week coming off of this particular win. SMU, on the other hand, got a little bit of some weird news today, and it doesn't seem that having all the money at your disposal buys you really happiness or a good conference, because the news report is that Clemson and or possibly Florida State is looking to leave the ACC right before SMU gets there.
Yeah, the funny thing that I saw was on Twitter. It was SMU is that person that the burglars kidnap, but then they give them back because they talk too much or they,
right,
you know, they smell.
They're
or
too annoying.
Yeah, they're too annoying, so they just like, hey, take them back. We don't need
the ransom. Just please take them back.
We're losing money, but
we'll pay you to take them back.
I just don't see SMU, and I don't mean this as a slight to SMU. Like, SMU is what they are. They're AAC, right? They were AAC. I don't see them fitting in with schools like Clemson and FSU and all those other schools, because
Miami.
If you picture Clemson coming to play in SMU Stadium in Dallas, like, their student section would fill out the stadium. Like,
oh, definitely.
If Clemson decided to all come out here and fill out their stadium, and we always get into these arguments with these teams about, oh, we have better capacity, or not capacity, we have better attendance or whatever. You could take half the crowd that was at this game just now and put them in SMU Stadium, and it's full. It's the stadium sizes are completely different. So that's why I don't see SMU fitting into this conference. Is it's like if Alabama played at South Alabama.
Right.
And South Alabama just beat OK State. So, again,
well, we
no
got high school
South
stadiums
Alabama
that have bigger capacities than SMU.
Yeah. I don't mean that as a slight to South Alabama that beat OK State.
No, not
but
at all.
But it's like one of those bigger schools going and playing a D3 school, and they fill out their stadium just by being there. It's just they don't fit into me. And so that's why I think it's weird. I understand why Clemson and FSU want out. They probably want to go to a better conference because the ACC is not – a top three. I think they're fourth in the Power Four.
I agree, 100%.
But yeah, I don't think that they want to stay in that conference for a reason. So take with that what you will.
Well, I agree. I think SMU moving to the ACC doesn't make a lot of sense. I understand the money involved, the financials of it is involved.
That money didn't win them last week.
It makes all the difference in the world. But the problem is that when TCU was moving into the Big 12, we had a history of winning up to that particular point.
We earned our spot.
Absolutely. We had a well-respected head coach. We were doing really well recruiting. We had a great stadium and commitments from our athletic director to make it even better. That was already in the works, and I think that's the important thing. Like, we already had foundations that were being used to raise money in order to redesign and retrofit, basically, AM&G Carter Stadium. And all of that played into TCU being asked to be a part of the Big 12 after A&M decided they were going to leave and everything else. So it made sense. It made business sense. It made college football sense. I don't see where SMU going to the ACC makes a whole lot of sense. Same thing with the California schools going to the ACC. That definitely, from a geographical standpoint, doesn't
dumb.
Make any sense.
That was dumb. I don't agree with that, because now you're introducing a whole new travel side to those schools and the student-athletes, really, of, hey.
Two different time zones.
Yeah, if you have back-to-back away games, you're going to be at school for like 2 days before, and they still got homework, classwork, all that stuff. Whether they do it or not is up to them, but they have all that stuff, and then now you're introducing all these travel times, these days, and all that time on the road, it adds up. Like, especially as you get later in the season, you start to have weather issues, whatever it may be. You get delays, and then now it's just I think it takes a toll on the student-athlete more than anything as you start to have those away games. And that's why I don't think that it made sense. But, you know, it is what it is now. It's a money thing, really.
Definitely. And if Clemson and Florida State actually end up leaving the ACC, that does leave a lot of schools kind of with a question mark. You know, University of Miami, for instance, or even Notre Dame. Speaking of Notre Dame, they just had a big game against Ohio State, unfortunately losing that game against Ohio State.
Yes, they did. And, it, you know, how you have 10 men on the field in that pivotal point of a game.
Yeah, that was the biggest mental error.
Well, you can't blame the kids that did that. You can't necessarily blame the head coach. I saw someone talking about it the other day. Is you have at least 50 people that should have seen and notified and made that brought that to somebody's attention. You got the guys in the box. You've got the players saying, "Hey, I'm not in the game." You've got the backup players who were saying, why are you standing next
to me?
Your
captain on the field.
Yeah, why are you standing here? You should be in the game. Or the person who's supposed to be in a different package, whatever package they thought they were in, is saying, hey, I'm not in the game either. Someone, or the linebacker, the safety, there's a gap that is not filled. So you have a lot of people, and that's a whole team mess up. So I don't blame one specific person, but you can't have that happen. And that's not the only time that's happened to them this season. They had it happen against a Division II team, and that team almost scored because of it.
Right, and that just kind of leads to a bigger issue, though, with Notre Dame. I mean, obviously, they're having an issue with their sideline, and they got to address that, because for that to happen at that point in this particular game is with everything's on the line. It's one of those kind of things that kind of scratch your head as a fan. It's like, how in the world could that possibly happen? With as many different layers of people that were there that should have been able to catch that at any given time. So it's an unfortunate situation for Notre Dame. I really was hoping that they'd be able to pull that one out.
I think we all were, because, you know, everybody loves to watch Ohio State lose.
It seems to – I don't know what it is about Ohio State, but it seems that every season they have one of these games where the ball just seems to bounce perfectly in their favor.
Well, according to Ryan Day, it's them against the world. Like, they don't get all the help that they can all the time. Like, the fact that they weren't even in the conference championship one year and still made the playoffs. Like, you want to make it about y'all. Like, you really have a lot of help and have had a lot of help. Of course Lou Holtz is going to pick the other team. Of course he's going to choose Notre Dame. It's Notre Dame. Like, that's Lou Holtz. Like, that'd be like me thinking Mac Brown's going to pick Texas over, or TCU over Texas. Like,
it's not going to happen.
No. So
that's an insane expectation. Of course he's going to pick.
Yeah.
So
Matthew McConaughey or something picking TCU over Texas. I don't know.
Right.
There's so many real examples. It was just, I don't understand why. I understand why he's mad. You just won. Like, relax.
Well, speaking of Texas, let's get into this Big 12 slate that we got this week. And we'll start off with Texas hosting Kansas. And this is going to be that one game. And I think even Clint's video this week, he had a pretty funny little spot there with Kansas there at the end. I won't spoil it for anybody. But this is the kind of game that always tends to kind of jump up and bite Texas in the rear end.
I've been saying it since, you know, they beat Alabama. I was like, wait, they still got to play Kansas. The only thing that sucks is that it's at Texas. And so they have a little bit more of that edge. I don't think they're going to struggle against Kansas. Kansas is really good. I think that I'm honestly glad we don't have to play them this year.
So am I.
That Daniels is doing great. You know, as long as they can stay healthy, I see them winning 8-9 games this year. Unfortunately,
I mean, who would have thought a couple years ago that Oklahoma State and Kansas would have flipped?
That's
just crazy.
Yeah, but I'm happy for them, I want them to obviously beat Texas. I don't know if it's going to happen with it being at Texas. But again, can't overlook anybody, and I think Texas has done that to them a lot in the last few years, and I love to see it.
Yeah, this has become one of those kind of games that's actually become a rivalry, an unintentional rivalry, to speak, between these two families.
Well, that's why Texas is leaving the Big 12. They're scared of Kansas.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know what it is, but I think Kansas is going to play this game a whole lot closer, and I think they're going to stick around a lot longer than Texas fans are expecting.
If they can keep momentum or keep hype into the late third quarter, the game could go either way. If Texas runs away with it early or late second quarter, I don't think they will run away with it that quickly. But if they start to run away within the first half or early third quarter, I think it's over.
Yeah, I think a 3-score lead at halftime.
Yeah,
I think it's done. But if they can stick around within,
if they
about
can hang
one
around,
or two
like
scores,
almost like a hard game against Colorado. If they can hang around, it's very winnable.
Yeah, and I think those players know it too, and they want it. So that's going to be the game to watch this week. Of course, tomorrow night starts off with two of the newcomers, Cincinnati at BYU. Of course, that's a late night game, but it is in Provo, so that's going to actually be a very beautiful game to watch on TV. Not really sure. I think BYU is definitely going to take that game. I don't think that's going to be a problem.
I think they're both looking for a Big 12 win still.
Yeah. Every newcomer lost last week.
Yeah.
So and the week before, of course, we beat Houston in their opener. So everybody's still looking for their first Big 12 win.
I see BYU winning that one. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely BYU, yeah. I think, on that game. And then, of course, you know, going to another newcomer, Houston, is going out to lovely Lubbock, Texas.
That's an old school rivalry game, right?
Yeah, just a bit, yeah. So it'll be fun to kind of watch that, just to see how these two fan bases react. Now, you know, when you were down in Houston, I was a little disappointed, especially seeing it on TV. Now, of course, there was a major thunderstorm that blew through right before the game. So it's understandable that may have lessened the attendance, but it was disappointing to see the attendance for the TCU game. So it'll be interesting to see how Houston travels to Lubbock this time.
I think it'll be good for them to see a Big 12 game, like, on the road, see, hey, this is how you show up. Because once you see that, you're like, okay, what do we need to do to change things up here at Houston to get our attendance better, to actually compete in the Big 12, not only from a team's perspective, but from a fan perspective. You want to, you know, I could see a stadium renovation coming in their new future in the next 5 years. I think they're actually about to redo their club suites and all that stuff. But you need an uplift. You need something. But they have to see it somewhere, and they have to see Big 12 stadiums. And I think that's a learning process for them. I'm not faulting them for that. You know, you've had success where you've had success, but now and it's going to be the same with Texas and OU. As they get to this new conference, you start to see, okay, this is how things are going to be now. We've got to adapt, or you end up like Mizzou and Texas A&M.
Business is not as usual when you join a new conference, so that's definitely the case. Speaking of another newcomer, Baylor now gets to actually go to lovely Florida and play UCF. This is going to be an interesting one.
I'm excited for that series. Maybe not this game.
Because I think they could become really big rivals.
I do too. And I think they could be exciting. If Baylor is able to get back to what they were, obviously this year has been a struggle. But if they were able to get back to where they were, I think that could be an exciting series to see.
I agree. But I think UCF takes that game, no doubt.
This week or this year, I see them taking that one, because I think Baylor played in a bowl game in Florida one of the years I was there, and so it'll be interesting. I think they played in a Florida game that year, but so it'll be cool for them to see. Honestly, a Florida game is almost like a bowl game every year, because you get to travel to a new state, like, and if you're not used to it, it's something new. So I'm excited that UCF is in here now.
Well, it's certainly more glamorous than traveling to, say, Lawrence or Manhattan, Kansas,
or
right?
Lubbock or Waco.
Or Lubbock, yeah. Jeez, nobody really wants to travel to Lubbock. It's more like you're forced to travel to Lubbock.
So that's why I'm excited for these new teams, mainly UCF, Cincinnati, BYU.
It's not that Cincinnati is high on my list of places to go, but certainly Provo is absolutely beautiful. And TCU fans know that from have been in a conference with BYU
Cincinnati
previously.
Has Skyline Chili, okay?
Well, that's true.
Don't sleep on Skyline
Chili.
So,
I mean, outside of the culinary reasons to visit Cincinnati, you know, UCF is definitely going to be one of those places that I think TCU fans are going to be really excited to actually travel to this year. But UCF is, out of all the newcomers, I think they were the ones that I had favored to actually win their first Big 12 game. I was kind of disappointed they weren't able to pull that one out. But I definitely think they're going to pick it up this week against Baylor.
Well, they got a national championship, apparently. So I said, apparently they have a national championship. So,
oh well, that's true. I mean, yeah, them and A&M. I mean,
we don't.
It's all good. And of course, Iowa State's going to be at Oklahoma. I don't think the Sooners are going to have any problems taking care of Iowa State.
No,
this week.
That series is like 49-7. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ridiculous line. So, you know, Oklahoma's going to win that game. And of course, that brings us to the game of the week, which, of course, West Virginia. The Mountaineers come down out of the Appalachians and come to Fort Worth to face against TCU Horned Frogs. And this is a game that's always kind of been fun. I mean, we both enter the league at the same time. And so it's almost like a sister school for us. The West Virginia fans are some of the best in the conference. Let's be honest. I mean, they haven't burned any couches on University Drive, but they are fun to actually get to know. And what do you want to see out of the game for TCU?
A blowout.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
But no, this is that game that's it's very hard to know what's going to happen. I think it's outside of two of the games, it's been a home win for most of it.
Yeah.
I think they won at our place. And we
and
beat
then,
them at their
yeah,
place.
Yeah, boy
in
can beat them 1 year at their place.
Yeah. So I think that it's outside of those games, it's been a home winner. So I'm hoping that continues this week. But again, they're just one of those teams. They're real tough. You know, you never know what you're going to get with them. You can't overlook them by any means whatsoever because you end up with that game like at West Virginia. And on the record, Baylor lost at West Virginia that year in 2014 pretty badly. So they're not someone you can overlook, whether it's home or away. I remember that 2015 year, it was a night game like this one that I think we blacked out too.
Yeah, we did.
And it was an exciting game, exciting atmosphere, I'll say that. We ended up winning pretty significantly. But that was also the game Trayvon got a high five from Dana.
Yeah, that was an amazing game. I was on sideline for that particular game. And that was a blackout game, just like this game is going to be a blackout game.
That's what I'm hoping to see, especially from the fans' perspective. I want to ADJD has said that they're giving out T-shirts. So if you're a fan, in the student section, they're giving out blackout T-shirts. So go there, get those, show up, be loud. But I want to see a great atmosphere, and I think that'll help us pull that out.
Well, a quick aside, because you mentioned the student section, do have to give a great call out to the students this year because they have shown up early. They have filled out their sections and some sections that weren't their sections.
Yeah, they took one of my teammates' seats.
It's been great to see. So blackout game. Now, the interesting thing here is that there's been a bit of a controversy as far as the quarterback at West Virginia, and it looks like the redshirt freshman is going to start on Saturday night. How do you think that fares for this 3-3-5 defense of the Frogs?
I know the story of every week is if we can get pressure, we're good. I think if we can rattle him, even if we don't get necessarily pressure, if we can just get hits on him, those hits add up. And those hits start to speed up your internal clock as a quarterback. And you start to be aware of, oh, I need to get rid of the ball. And so it speeds up your reads a lot. And so I think that will help us if we can fluster him, get in his head.
Do you think Gillespie is going to just kind of rely on the front three to get that pressure, or do you think he's going to bring
stunts? I think he'll mix it up for sure. I haven't seen a lot of their games. I watched a little bit of their Pitt game, so I'm not super familiar with how they handle pressure. But if you can find different ways to do that, and especially as a freshman, it's a different level from high school to college. So there, obviously, we've had freshmen come in and be super successful, but as a quarterback, that's a different speed. You've got to read things a lot quicker. I think if we can confuse him a lot, I think we'll have a lot of success in flustering him, getting him out of the pocket. Just got to make tackles. I think that's our biggest thing right now is just making sure we're tackling.
Yeah, I agree. I think what we're going to end up seeing out of Gillespie's game plan here is that he's going to basically sell out to stop the run and try to force this redshirt freshman to actually beat us through the air. It's going to be very similar to what Colorado did with Morris in the first game of the season. And I think we'll see some success. I think the safeties are starting to get comfortable with this scheme, which seems a little weird. But, I mean, when you replace as many guys as we did on the defensive side of the ball last year, and seeing these guys starting to get comfortable with understanding where they need to be in the position, and I think that we're going to do very well against this offense of West Virginia. And I think we're going to see probably one of the better defensive starts of the game out of TCU. Now, on the offensive side, the Frogs have really got to dominate the line, and they've really got to continue to feed Bailey. But how do you feel that Morris is going to be able to do against this backfield of West Virginia?
I think he gets better every week. He gets more comfortable with his reads. Obviously, even last week, we probably should have had a pick in the end zone. But corner or safety, whoever it was, dropped it. I think he gets more
thankfully.
Thankfully. I think he gets more and more comfortable every week, comfortable using his legs. And so, again, that adds that extra weapon for us. And so I want to continue to see him develop and get better, like I said, and get more comfortable back there. Got to make he came out last week. The throws were a little hot. And I don't know if that's an 11 a.m. thing because he did it against Colorado too. Throws were a little hot. Probably could have had some, that one to battle on the
– Oh, it was right through his hands.
Yeah, and it was – but it was, again, it was a little hot. We had another one on the front pylon that was a little bit high. You know, he can get settled and be comfortable. I think we're going to see a lot out of him, which I'm excited for. But I think it starts with our offensive line.
Yeah, I agree. I think if the offensive line could give him time, I think if he can kind of get settled and into a rhythm on this – I think there's a possibility that TCU is going to definitely score a ton of points in this game. And I agree with you. I think Morris has done a really good job of kind of progressing from week in, week out. And one of the things that I'm really impressed with him is his accuracy. We haven't seen the type of throws out of him that we did like Max, where it seemed like, you know, yeah, within about 15 yards, Max was somewhat accurate. And it was okay, but it was inconsistent. Mm-hmm. With Morris, he's consistent, but the inconsistency becomes the touch on the ball,
yeah,
not necessarily his accuracy. The ball is there. It's just whether or not he has enough air on the ball or whether or not he has a touch on the ball or whether or not he's just going to throw a laser.
And he has. They have had some bad drops by the receivers on that.
A lot of bad drops.
Yeah. And I think Chandler's really good at the kind of pressured throw, off-balance throws. You've seen it on blitz. A couple of blitzes that he's made that sidearm.
Oh, last week there was that one blitz that it just looked like there was nobody open, and he found a guy.
Yeah, and he dropped it.
Yeah, it was great. But overall, I think Morris is going to be I think we're going to see the side of Morris this week with this West Virginia defense, and I think it is one of the question marks of West Virginia is whether or not their defense is going to be able to shut down the amount of weapons that TCU is going to bring to bear. And, you know, we didn't quite see a lot of these guys last week. Savion Williams went for stretches without ever calling his number. We have, you know, Everhart starting to pick up and really kind of become a part of this offense and this wide receiver rotation. I think a lot of the guys that Morris is starting to get comfortable with, I think we're going to see some pretty interesting things over the next couple of weeks with him, and I think it starts this week against West Virginia.
Yeah, I think as an offensive coordinator, you pick up on that. You see who he has chemistry with. J.P. Richardson goes to him a lot, obviously Wiley. You start to kind of key on those things because, obviously, I think they all recognize that Savion Williams is a big threat, and so they start to cover him a little differently and maybe throw a safety over the top. But that's going to leave other guys open, and so you start to use those. Even Wiley, he's probably going to get double covered in this game.
Well, Curtis.
Times. Yeah, you go to Curtis, you know, bet. And so I think that you start to see that, but as offensive coordinator, now my job is to get other guys open. And so hopefully they can do that and, you know, spread the ball around a lot. Hopefully, you know, Chandler is comfortable, putting some touch on the ball and able to distribute well. And I think that that'll be our biggest key to success is just making sure he's comfortable. And I think that starts with our O-line. And obviously the O-line is going to be key in our run game. So offensively, I'm looking at our O-line to step that up. Receivers got to make passes. Everybody's got to do their job, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that was nice last week that I hope we continue to see this week is that we continue to throw the ball downfield rather than dealing with these kind of ridiculous bubble screens and these horizontal plays. We saw a lot more downfield passing last week, and I want to be able to continue to see that this week against West Virginia. I think if we do that, it's going to be a successful night for the Frogs.
Yeah, 100%. As long as we don't see, like, three deep shots, like, in a row, yeah. It's balance. That's my biggest thing that I like to see is balance. And we've had that for most of the part. Obviously, there's some times in games where we kind of get a little too happy with either the run when it's, you know, only getting 1 or 2 yards, or all of a sudden we're running down the field and it turns into, hey, we're going to take a shot at the end zone 3 times in a row. It's like, have some balance. That's where I can understand some of the fans' frustrations. But I think with it being a night game, high atmosphere, you know, hopefully we can put them away early. So like we were talking about with Kansas, they don't hang around too long. If they hang around, then it becomes one of those stressful games. But I think we've done pretty well in night games. It's a blackout. It's intimidating. So I'm excited for this game.
So am I. I think it's going to be a great game. And, you know, we've already set 2 attendance records this season. We're looking for a 3rd one against West Virginia, and I think it's possible at this point.
I think it's funny we set one of the attendance records against SMU.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's good to do that for a rivalry game.
Yeah.
But let's get into predictions then. So West Virginia comes into Fort Worth. What do you think the final score is going to be, Nathan? I know, it's a tough question.
Yeah.
Are you going to be typical Nathan, or are you feeling a little more comfortable this week?
I don't know if this is going to constitute as typical me, but I'm going 38-28 TCU.
38-28. I mean, that's a solid score. I mean, it's a 10-point.
I don't want to jinx myself, but I am within 5. I'm averaging within 5 points every offensive points.
Right.
Defensive, I'm way off. Like, I never know what they're going to do.
That's good. I'm going to be a little bit more, I'll say, optimistic on the score on this game. I'm going to say it's going to be TCU 48, and it's going to be West Virginia 32.
I hope we score 48, and I hope they score 28. So we'll go.
I hope so too. I think it'll be a good game, and I'm hoping that by the time halftime rolls around, TCU's up a couple of scores, takes the pressure off a little bit, and we just kind of roll on this particular game and have a good night. It's a great rivalry game for us. It's a wonderful night. It's going to be great weather for the game, so make sure you get out there early, tailgate with us. Wear black. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like this game just because of how our fan bases are. We don't hate each other, and so we just have to find things to, like, pick up on. Or, like, I've ended up on a couple of the lookalike threads when I was at TCU, and so that's why I like this matchup, is just because, one, you never know what you're going to get from either team, and two, the fan bases just have a mutual, like, we tolerate you. We all know who we really hate. You're not that person. I don't like you this week, but every other week, you know what? You can win all you want.
That's a good way to put it. Well, with that, we have come to the end of the podcast. I want to thank everybody out there who has joined us this week. Of course, you can find Killer Frogs online by going to killerfrogs.com. You can go to the forum, sign up for a free account, and go ahead and discuss TCU Athletics with the rest of us knuckleheads. At the same time, let us know what you think the score prediction is going to be for Saturday night against West Virginia. And, of course, you can find us and all the articles on the Fan Nation at Sports Illustrated, or just go to killerfrogs.com. And with that, we've come to the end of the podcast. It's a time when we all get our frogs up and we get to say,
Go Frogs!